You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Shorty, the man who's got the call. Shorty, he's actually really tall. Shorty, the man who's got the call. Shorty, he's actually really tall.
6:32 on a Friday.
Shorty. And it goes on like this.
Shorty.
Kind of fades out.
I totally forgot about this one.
We don't use it enough.
No. We should use it more.
In our defense, he keeps saying no to coming
this
on our
true.
Show.
True.
Right, yeah. Kind of requires him to be on the show.
It's true. No, we should just play randomly.
Yeah, play it for Batch one time. Yeah. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour one of the program. John Shorthouse going to join us in just a moment here. The highlight of hour one. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. Before we get to Shorty, a reminder, it's Ask Us Anything Friday. We are giving away a $100 gift card to AJ's Pizza on East Broadway for the best Ask Us Anything. Put a pizza emoji into your Ask Us Anything and hashtag it AUA. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650.
The Canucks schedule against the Predators, maybe A-Dog could make a song for this because it's pretty easy to remember if you have a song to it.
Okay.
It just goes Sunday, Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Friday, Sunday.
It's not bad.
Sunday, Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Friday, Sunday.
Okay. I'll workshop it.
Yeah.
It won't have much shelf life as
You're
a jingle.
Right.
It really only lasts the duration of the first
one
round.
Lyric, 10 seconds.
But it is catchy. Okay, to the phone lines we go. John Shorthouse from Winnipeg joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Shorty?
Not to date myself, but are you a Happy Days fan?
Because
Brough singing there to memorize the schedule reminded me of Potsy Weber when he made up the song to remember the anatomy.
Can you sing I don't remember that one.
Can you sing it? Can you sing it?
No, I can't remember how it went, but I'm sure that when we go to break, that A-Dog will have it lined up by then.
Sunday, Tuesday versus the Preds, Friday, Sunday. And
well, there you go. That's the actual Happy Days.
That's what I thought you meant when it was like Happy Days. I was like, oh, okay.
No, in fact, that's a way better bit. It's early, and I'm not used to being on the radio at this time of day. But, yeah, no, I went right to Potsy Weber when I should have just gone with the theme song.
Didn't Sam Malone and Coach do that too? I'm dating myself now with early Cheers.
Some more timely references for the Halford and Brough Show.
Because Coach was tutoring Sam and they had songs for everything. Anyway.
Yeah. It is helpful. Mm-hmm. By the way, I was nervous coming on this morning because, you never want to like anger your bosses. And I assumed that Sportsnet was going to put out a press release last night with all the schedules and who was working and whatever. And so it hadn't come out, but it came out like 4 minutes ago.
So I
feel totally confident to come on here and talk about what the assignments are for the opening round.
Well, we've talked about it for the last half hour, and we're going to start with it right now. John Shorthouse, how excited are you to be calling your first ever Canucks playoff games on television?
You mean as a kid that grew up in Carisdale and wants nothing more for the Vancouver Canucks than for the Vancouver Canucks to win a Stanley Cup? A kid who grew up with a transistor radio under his pillow so he could listen to Jim Robson and Tom Larshine past his bedtime. It's huge. It's great. Now, you know, I've been at this racket for quite a long time. I was going, after you and I talked, Mike, yesterday, I went through I was like, I wonder how many playoff games I've done of the Canucks, like overall. Mm-hmm. And the number is 105 over 11 years when they've made the postseason. But never, ever before on the TV medium. So it's a step in my career, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's the best time of the year. I just feel great for, like, I can relate to this through my own kids. Like, my son hasn't seen a playoff series in Vancouver, you know, where they actually played a game in Vancouver with fans and attendance and all that. In fact, he hasn't seen a Canuck playoff game Yeah, like that, but since he was 11.
Right.
And he's now wrapping up second year university. You know, like, there's a whole generation, he doesn't really remember that 2015 series all that much. He remembers crying after they blew game six, but that's about it. And it, for people who haven't witnessed it, and for fans who are maybe going to go to their first ever playoff game in person, like those first 10 minutes of game one, it's you're going to be like, wow, there's this gear for both teams. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's all of a sudden. And the thing about this series is I think these are the top two hitting teams in the West. So, I mean, it's just going to be so physical. There's going to be such an electricity in the building. Because it is just a completely different beast when you get to playing games at this time of year. I remember some of the years when the Canucks were so good, you know, in their run from like 09 through 12 and 13. And just the first few minutes of those opening games of the playoffs, it was just so intense as both teams try to kind of set the tone. And you realize that there's just so many levels that the game can get ratcheted up to when there's more on the line and the players have that extra juice.
So I'm just checking the email, the aforementioned email and the press release, and it is out there now. So not only are you getting to call your first ever game, Canucks playoff game on TV, but the whole crew sticks together. It's you on play-by-play, Dave Tomlinson as your color analyst, and Dan Murphy working ringside as the Sportsnet NHL reporter. So that's got to be pretty cool, too, that the whole team gets to do this. As, and as you mentioned, it's the first time since 2015 that we're going to get playoff hockey back at Rogers Arena.
Mike, I thought we agreed we were just going to talk about me.
I know. I feel but you know what? I wanted to give DT and Murph a little love, a little shine. If you want to continue the narrative, feel free.
No, it's amazing, and it's going to be so much fun. And I need, for people who don't know this, I need to reiterate, because I have found through doing this job, and I know that Jason has opinions on this, but people are very fond of the theory of jinxes and jinxing things with words that are used or this, that, or the other thing. Well, how about a reverse jinx? How about like the Canucks hockey equivalent of a rabbit's foot? Dave Tomlinson took over the radio color chair in October of 2010 as he replaced the retiring Tom Larshide. And in his first year working with me on the radio mic at 10:40, the Canucks went to game seven of the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. And here he is, takes over this year in the television color chair, replacing the retiring John Garrett, and out of nowhere, and I think we can all agree that it was out of nowhere, the Canucks put up 109 points and win the division, and maybe Dave just is the lucky charm that this team needs to go on a long playoff run.
Well, maybe he's the jinx that caused them to lose game seven.
Well, there's that too. that was very Bruffian. A very Bruffian way to look at life.
Well, look at the negative part of it. Why didn't he get it done? Some rabbit's foot.
We are speaking to John Shorthouse, Canucks television play-by-play man here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. I mentioned you're in Winnipeg, Shorty, which I hear is lovely in April. What did you think of last night's game? I know that there wasn't much to take from it, but two things in particular. How did Thatcher Demko look in his second game back from action? And then we'll get to Elias Lindholm in a second as well.
I thought Demko looked good. You know, he had the one little stick handling boo-boo on, I guess, the winning goal. So you can, but he was back in position, you know, by the time the puck came in front, and it was by that point, it was kind of a blown coverage, but he contributed to it. But other than that, I thought positionally he was good. I thought that save he made, was it the opening shift when Ehlers had that kind of dirty, deft,
right,
sneaky angle pass from below the goal line, and Demko could easily have gone to the wrong post because you would have fully expected the puck to be going all the way around the net. Instead, he stays with it and makes the short side save. And I think it could have been 1-0. There's so many games this year, but I feel like that was on the opening shift, maybe. I think he looks dialed in. You know, he's put in the work, and he takes the mechanical things he works on, and they just become second nature. And there have been goalies through the years who I know have worked with Ian Clark and, you know, you go through the mechanical stuff, and then you get into the game situation, and I'm not saying this just about Ian Clark, I'm talking about guys who work with any goalie coach, but you, when they play, you can almost see the mind making decisions, and it looks mechanical. It looks like they're thinking it through rather than just feeling it and going with it. And I think Demko works so hard at it. He puts in so much time that it becomes second nature. And all these mechanical things that are ingrained in you about where you need to be and what position you need to be in and how you have to get there, they just look completely seamless. And that's what I've seen in his two games back. I know that he gave up three yesterday in a 4-2 loss, but I think all signs are great that he's ready to hit the ground running here in the postseason. And it's going to be, it should be, you never know for sure what's going to transpire, but it should be a very, very intriguing goaltending matchup with UC Saros at the other end.
Elias Lindholm, four games back in the lineup. I think it's looked good. The production's been there as well, and I don't know if it's cause and effect or correlation, but 14 consecutive penalty kills for the Canucks now.
I think there's a correlation. And, you know, special teams-wise, Nashville and Vancouver, you know, kind of close to each other on both sides of the ledger in terms of where they rank and their percentages and all that. But when he's, you know, on top of his game, and, you know, I suppose it looks like he's healthy enough to do pretty much everything, then he's a very effective player. And, you know, if you handicap teams versus each other when you're going into a series and you look at the certain areas of the game that people deem important, well, I think one of them is, how strong are you down the middle? And if the Canucks go into this series with Miller, Pettersson, and Lindholm all playing, you know, somewhere near the top of their level, I don't even think it's close.
We're speaking to John Shorthouse here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Shorty will be calling his first ever Canucks playoff games on television starting Sunday against the Nashville Predators. The schedule we got released yesterday, there were some rumblings that they might throw us game 6-7 back to back into the schedule. Those rumors ultimately proved unfounded, but we do get a pretty interesting one. Game 4 in Nashville, a 2:00 local time start, open the bars up early. What did you think when you got the schedule last night, Shorty?
Well, I was a little nervous when I was hearing the rumors of this back to back, because I wasn't nervous actually, because it just made no sense to me. With the distance between the two cities, and I know, like, we live in 2024 and air travel is, you know, quite readily available, but it's just a long way to go. Where I was nervous is that I've seen this before, and, you know, it's just one of the most ludicrous pieces of schedule making I've ever seen in my life was in 2003 when the Canucks in Minnesota in their second round series played back to back in games 6 and 7. And of course that was the year where the Canucks came from 3-1 down to win in the opening round against St. Louis. And then they blew a 3-1 lead in the second round against Minnesota. I think Minnesota had come from 3-1 down in their first round series too against the Avalanche, I think. And then they did it again to the Canucks, but that's the dumbest piece of scheduling. Well, there's two, but that one stood out because it was a game 7. I mean, what are you doing, NHL? It just seemed ludicrous. The other dumb one actually was the Canucks played back-to-back, but it was regular season. But it was first game was in Edmonton, and the second game was in Chicago. And I think we got to our hotel after the Edmonton game at about 6:30 in the morning with a game that night against the Blackhawks. And that was when the Canucks went up 3-0 and then lost.
Shorty, can we just get your thoughts on the season as a whole? Maybe the expectations that you came in with, and then now we're looking at one of the best regular seasons in franchise history.
Yeah. Oh, to me, it's been such a pleasant surprise. I think when you follow a team this closely, and I'm not suggesting I follow any more closely than you do, Jason, because I think this is a big part of your life. But I think it's easy to kind of get into that can't see the forest for the trees kind of mentality, because it had been so many years of kind of following the same script. And in terms of what I do, there were a lot of years there where Cheech and I would call games, and because of the way the season had started and the way the season was going, that you would just treat each game as a completely separate entity with no relation to the game before, the game after, with no relation to the standings, which you've just basically pretended didn't exist, because it was the only way to get through.
Right.
You know, you just treated each night as a separate night. Here's 2.5 hours of entertainment. Let's see how tonight goes. Well, this year, you know, it's all about how are they trending? You know, is the game moving in the proper direction here, because they can make a serious run at it? The games are related to each other. The standings do exist. It's just been a whole lot of fun. And in a lot of ways, I think it's been out of the blue. You know, you're never going to have a senior manager probably oversell. But I honestly don't think Jim Rutherford at the start of the year was necessarily underselling. I think he was being honest in that season opening press conference when he said, if, you know, things, I'm paraphrasing, but if things go perfectly, we'll be knocking on the door to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Well, I think things went almost perfectly for this team when you consider the production and the health of their top players. I know Demko missed 14 games recently, but in terms of their top guys, that's really it. And in a season that's gone, you know, by the standards you would probably apply to this franchise, a season that's gone relatively perfectly, well, they're more than just knocking on the door to make a wild card spot. They're division winners. They have 109 points. They have 50 wins for the third time in franchise history. I mean, it's I know that this is probably going to devolve a little bit into the debate of, okay, well, then what constitutes a successful season? But from where I'm coming from and from the seasons that I had witnessed leading into this one, this season, in my mind, is already a success. And people might quibble with that, but that's how I feel, because having lived it day in and day out for so many years, like, this has just been such a breath of fresh air.
How did they do it ultimately? Like, what would the story in Shorty's mind be about how they went from a team where you almost had to, like, compartmentalize each game and call the games, yeah, to a team where you actually dare to look ahead and maybe even dare to dream about what this team could do?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the answer lies in some really astute managing. I mean, they hit on so many of their decisions, don't you think? I mean, they rebuilt the blue line, and they did it with an eye to, okay, what's going to be successful in April and May? And you know, they went big, and they went, you know, tall and heavy and tough to play against, and surrounded Quinn Hughes with a completely different kind of feel of what kind of defense they were going to have. And they hit, like, have you ever seen anything like the percentage that they batted in terms of their professional free agent signings?
Well, yeah, and they seem,
I mean,
to,
they just,
yeah, seem to pick the right coach too.
Well, and that, well, you know, we'll get to that, because you know, you remember Rick Tocchet's first practice when he would blow the whistle every 5 seconds and move the puck around the zone, blow the whistle and say, okay, are you in the right position?
Yeah.
Blow the whistle to start again, blow it to stop. Okay, are you in the right position? Like, it was back to the most bare basics you could possibly imagine.
Does everyone have their skate guards off? Does everyone have, like, it was like that kind of, like,
yeah. No, like, it got that base. But I have one more thing I want to add to it, because I think astute managing, the way they rebuilt the defense, you know, the vision they had for it and the way they executed it, the signing decisions they made, the guys they identified, a la Bluger, you know, a la Suter, a la Cole, Susie, going on and on and on. But on top of that, guys, I think their incumbent players, many of whom are or are on the cusp of being superstars, right, in this league. You think of the number of star players the Canucks have. I just think, personally, they were sick of losing.
Yeah.
Like, just sick and tired of losing. And I think, you know, coming in with the right mindset of, enough of this, I'm done. Let's have a good year. That combined with the emphasis that Rick Tocchet put on them being prepared to play coming out of the summer and showing up early and being in shape and not, you know, not waiting until camp started to really start taking things seriously. I just think that that set the table for this season to be as marvelous as it's been.
Well, Shorty, I think I speak for all of us here when we say we're very happy that we get to hear you on Sunday night. We're very excited to get this thing underway. It's been a long time since we've had playoff hockey in Vancouver. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Fly safe, travel safe, and enjoy calling the game on Sunday night and then all the subsequent games in this playoff run.
Thanks, guys. I love the show. Long-time listener, first-time contributor.
Thanks,
see
buddy.
See you, Shorty. Thanks,
that's,
buddy.
That's John Shorthouse, Canucks play-by-play man here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Real quick, because during our interview with Shorty, Sportsnet released the first round assignments and all the things we need to know. A couple interesting notes. The usual panel that we see in intermissions and pre- and post-game with Juice and Friege and Kelly Rudy, Luke Gazdick is going to be on the panel.
Nice. Albro regular?
Nice.
And yeah, yeah. Get this, New Jersey Devils goalie laddie, Jake Allen is going to be on the panel this weekend doing some media for Sportsnet.
Very well-spoken guy.
Yeah. The Leaf series is going to be Cuthbert and Simpson. Kings Oilers is going to be Harnerayan Singh and Louis DeBrusque. Obviously, Canucks Preds is going to be Shorty and DT. Winnipeg is going to be Bartlett and Gary Galley. And those are your assignments for the Canadian series in the opening round. So it's, I'm getting excited. Like, you can feel the energy building, and it's going to start on Saturday where we've got a doubleheader, and then Sunday it's just jam-packed.
Four games.
Quadruple header, mm-hmm. Right? Like, it couldn't be any better, including the nightcap. 7 o'clock, Rogers Arena, game one, Canucks, Preds. The building's going to be lit. You're going to have all day to watch hockey and consume alcoholic beverages. It's a Sunday. I'm very excited.
So wait,
can you tell?
Game four is 2 o'clock our time?
That is correct, Andy.
Wow, that's so early.
Yeah, apparently the Predators fans were surprised in a good way that they didn't get any 8:30 local start times, because sometimes they get dinged.
Sometimes
they
get screwed. The Central teams are like, God, it's going to be a late night.
The Sunday game is a 4 o'clock local start. I wanted to ask Shorty about that, actually. Can you imagine what a game four Sunday afternoon party time in Nashville is going to look like? You have to get the pregame started pretty early that morning.
They're going to have the tailgate over at the Titans Stadium.
Yeah, they're going to have to, seriously.
Is that 2 o'clock our time?
2 o'clock our time, 4 yeah. o'clock their
to
time.
Confirm.
It's an early start there, too. Yeah. Right? And having been to Nashville on a playoff game day, I can tell you, even if they don't really understand the sport 100%, the city understands partying 100%. They know how to do it up. They know how to close down Broadway.
Okay, the new you guys got to drink a lot of beer today. Yeah. Can you handle this?
Right,
we can handle this.
There's a lot of guys drinking Natty Lights in a lawn chair in the middle.
Is that going to be there for round one, though? I don't know if it's going to be there for round one. We were there for the Stanley Cup Final, but
we'll talk to Robbie. We'll talk to Robbie Stanley about this from 102.5 The Game in Nashville at 7:30. Mm-hmm. But he did say on a couple of occasions that, like, the energy isn't quite at the level when they went to the Stanley Cup in 2017, but the belief in the team is as high, or it's the highest it's been since then. Like, they've had
Trotz is back, man.
That's the thing. And when they went on that run, I mean, anytime a team can go on an 18-game streak where they don't lose in regulation, like, there's going to be some momentum that gets built. And I'll say this. Nashville likes a party. It doesn't matter what it is. It just, if they like to party, they like to have a good time.
Like, they like it. They love it.
Yeah.
They want some more of it.
How awesome is it that playoff hockey just happens to coincide with the weather getting better?
See, that's a big part of it. Just get
makes outside. makes my mood so much. I mean, the longer I've lived in Vancouver, I love Vancouver, but for me, I'm getting older now. The winters are getting harder. Mm-hmm. It's like it's so dark and rainy, and then all of a sudden, like, and if the Canucks are going on one of their, you know, annual death marches, it's kind of like, it makes it even worse, right?
The winters are getting harder.
They're getting harder, and now, you know, you get the double whammy.
Colonial soldier?
Yeah. Yeah.
Future snowbird, Ruff.
I write letters home. Oh, mother, man. I don't think I'm going to make it back.
Now, of course, it's supposed to rain on Sunday.
Hug Father for me.
No, but I mean, the weather's been amazing these last few days, and we've got the excitement of it. Just makes it makes getting together with friends easier. You know, like if you want to do something this weekend with your friends, like hopefully the weather's going to hold. And, you know, you can do something outside and then you go, you play golf and then you can go watch the games. It's good to be a Canucks fan right now.
Yeah, no doubt.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Rick Dhaliwal. Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Dhali.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Dhali.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
8:02 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Sweet, sweet Friday. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. It is What We Learn time coming up at 8:30, along with Ask Us Anythings. We're giving away a $100 gift card to AJ's Pizza on East Broadway for the best Ask Us Anything. I might have to give the gift card to Jason, though, because
yeah, Bruff's take it.
Bruff's Ask Us Anything.
I actually asked it with a pizza emoji.
He did. He texted it in.
I'm like, pizza emoji.
You don't have to text it in. You're right next to me. The question was, can you the feedback has been great already.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone accusing us if we don't have kids. I don't know how you took that from that, but that's fine. reset the question before we get to Dhaliwal.
If you moved to Vancouver as an adult and you already had an NHL team that you cheered for, should you encourage your kids to be fans of your team, or should you say you're in Vancouver now, you're a Canucks fan?
Okay, it's a really good Ask Us Anything. It's elicited a lot of responses into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Real quick, we are in hour three of the program. Dhaliwal is going to join us in just a moment here. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, to the phone lines we go. He is one half dynamic duo known as Donnie and Dhali on Czech TV. Rick Dhaliwal now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Rick?
Gentlemen, let's go. Let's go. It's Friday.
That's the energy we like, Rick. Rick's fired up. We're all fired up. How excited are you for Sunday, bud?
Very much so. Think about this fan base in the last 10 years. And despite 10 years of bleep hockey, they still filled the rink every night. The owners, you know, the owner's very lucky here. The crowds didn't go down to 8,000-9,000 like they did in the 80s. This fan base filled the rink the last 10 or 11 years during some bad hockey teams, no playoffs. They waited too long for this. Halford, it's here. And Sunday, and more than anyone else, it's for the fans who have suffered here. You know, I look at Detroit's gone 8 years, no playoffs. Buffalo's gone 13, no playoffs. Arizona just ended a long streak. Florida ended a long streak a couple of years ago. Arizona's in 11 out of 12, no playoffs. You're seeing around the league.
They also lost their team. I feel like that's relevant.
Well, okay, you can say now Salt Lake or whatever they're going to be called, Utah. But you're starting to see fan bases around the league miss playoffs for like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years. Vancouver got stuck too, but they still filled the rink. And, you know, we were the ones going to the Coliseum in the 80s when there was 8,000 against Quebec on a Tuesday night. But that's not happening anymore. This is one of the strongest hockey markets in the NHL, and they've proven that by going to the rink when there was no playoffs. And Sunday is everything to do with them, and it's their big night on Sunday.
How do you think the Canucks match up against the Preds?
Well, first of all, I want to say most people I talk to are picking the Canucks, but it won't be easy. The Canucks swept the season series, but the last meeting was in mid-December. If you take a peek at the Nashville newspapers, they're trumping the fact Since the last meeting, Nashville's won more games than Vancouver. And since February 1st, the Predators are second in the NHL in goals for and second in power play. They also had that 18-game unbeaten streak. So only problem for Nashville, they've been off since Tuesday. They could be rusty. Both teams, I'm going to tell you this much right now, both teams did not want to start game one next Tuesday, and they let the league know in no uncertain terms. It'll be a series that's going to have the most travel in round one by a long shot. Mm-hmm. This is it. This is the one. Okay, you throw in the travel with the fact Nashville is fourth in the NHL in hits. The Canucks are fifth. I got a feeling whoever comes out of this, they're going to be feeling it. It's going to be a physical series. I mean, Nashville's got some big boys who like to hit, but I don't see a drop-off for the Canucks in the playoffs from how they played in the regular season because of Rick Tocchet. All season, he never let them get complacent, never let them read their press clippings. The structure's there. The culture of getting better every day is there. The accountability is there. This guy's going to have them prepared and ready to go on Sunday. But the one area most people are concerned with the Canucks, is the lack of playoff experience on the roster, especially the core players. 818 playoff games for the Predators, led by Ryan O'Reilly and Ryan McDonagh. And don't forget, a good chunk of their players were in the Stanley Cup final in 2017. 482 playoff games for the Canucks. Teddy Bluger and Ian Cole have won the Stanley Cup. Cole's got 116 playoff games under his belt. No one else is even close to that on the Canucks roster. So a big reason why they signed Cole was that experience. And so there you go. There's a lot of factors to take in. But, this is a series that I think most people are picking Vancouver to win.
Anything to take from last night's game against the Winnipeg Jets?
They got through with no injuries. Mission accomplished. It was a mean-nothing game for both teams. I'm a little surprised they didn't give Hughes the night off. I really thought they would. He still played 22, 23 minutes. Hironic could be battling something, just like Besser. The plan with Demko was always to play the final two games, get the reps in before the playoffs. The team's 100% healthy. When is the last time the regular season ended in this city and the Canucks were 100% healthy? Like, I don't know if you guys can remember. I don't. I think last year, this time, didn't they have 9-10 guys injured and they had a half of Abbotsford up? One thing I like about last night, Garland getting his 20th. 14 points last 14 games. This guy had 3 goals in December. Think about where his head was the day before the regular season opener when the story broke that his agent had permission to seek a trade. Now he hits 20 goals. He seems like he's the happiest guy on the team. Fans chanting his name. So that was pretty cool to see him get 20 after, the one day before the regular season. The guy was set 3 goals at Christmas or whatever it was in December, and for him to pour it on in the second half was pretty nice.
Rick, I might be putting you on the spot here, but what is the biggest X factor for you in this series? The wild card factor could go the Canucks' way, but it may go against the Canucks as well.
I first of all, I think up the middle of the ice, they win the battle. I think their centers, I think the X factor is their centers. Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm, Bluger. I don't think matchup-wise, Nashville can compete with that. And Lindholm, 5 points last 6 games. He's healthy. He's coming on. He's still not, what everyone expected when they traded for him. But I think the X factor is that their center group is much stronger than Nashville center group. And that, for me, you can say whatever you want about the Lindholm trade, but the one thing that did, I know they wanted him in the top 6 to be a winger with Pettersson and have, a ton of chemistry and light it up. But him going to the third line center spot gives Vancouver an absolute great 4 sets of center in this series. I don't think Nashville's there. I think the Canucks up the middle are way stronger. And I think that's going to bode well for Vancouver. Everywhere else, the goaltending, Demko, the defense, I don't underestimate Nashville. McDonough's played a ton of games with the Rangers in the Eastern Conference Final. He's won Stanley Cups. That blue line, and they also got Lauzon, who broke a record this year for the most hits in the NHL in one season. Think about that for a second. You got Luke Shen. That's a big physical defense. This is going to be a physical series. I'm going to be looking forward to seeing the hits after every game. and who led in the hit department. That's going to be big for me. But I think for me, the X factor is the Canucks up the middle. I think they're stronger in Nashville.
Well, I can hear Donnie in the background there. I've also heard Donnie brings up Pettersson almost as much as I do. What has Donnie thought about Pettersson's game heading into the playoffs?
Donnie's Pettersson's number one fan. Number one fan. Nobody pumps Pettersson more than Taylor in the market. Yikes. He's got to be the guy. He's got to be the guy. You know, did you see the year-end awards? And it was Miller, exciting MVP. That's a guy that's got to be in the year-end awards for me. And you know, you're going to get a big, huge raise. Everyone's going to have their eyes on Pettersson. And you know, I think last night, he didn't have any shots on that, did he not?
No, he didn't. He had some chances to shoot, but he passed them up.
He passed him up, but I think he's only got two or three shots. He's got to shoot. He's got a wonderful shot. He's a guy that a lot of eyes are going to be on because he's got to be a difference maker in the top six. And, you know, Miller's doing his part, got over 100 points, and he's your emotional leader, Miller. But, I mean, you nailed it. A lot of eyes will be on Pettersson in this playoff series. There's no question in my eyes. And especially if things don't go the way they do for the Canucks, I think that could be the hot-button subject for Vancouver fans for sure.
Are you at all surprised that the Canucks didn't move to or haven't re-signed any of their pending UFAs?
You know what's funny is that Jim Rutherford said a couple of weeks ago that it's possible a free agent could sign before the playoffs. Well, we all thought he was talking about UFAs, but he was talking about the RFA, Vasily Podkolzin. So they started talks with Podkolzin a while back. That's the guy, when Rutherford told Ian McIntyre we could sign a free agent before the playoffs, that's the guy he was talking about. It wasn't UFAs, it was Podkolzin. I'm not hearing anyone's close with the UFAs. But the big one for me is Joshua, guys. Did you see his 18th goal against the Flames the other night? He picked the corner pretty nice.
Yeah.
That's 18 goals in 63 games. That's a 24-goal pace. I got to double-check this, but he was one hit shy of the team record for hits in a season held by Max Lapierre. I think he had 244 and 211.
And he's a good penalty killer.
He had 243 hits, led the Canucks, one off the record with 19 games missed. If he hits July 1st, there's going to be significant interest. A big guy like that can hit and score and fight. You know, he was on a 24-goal pace. He's in a good spot. I'm hearing right now there's still lots of work to do before he signs with the Canucks. This is a priority signing for Vancouver. They have lots of time to get it done. But his agent's got really good ammunition to command over $3 million a year. Can the Canucks get there? Time will tell.
So I know it's not a front burner issue, but I know you wanted to talk about Klimovic and his year in Abbotsford and the future for him.
Yeah, I know it's not front burner, but it's important, and I'll tell you why. Klimovic, 2 goals, 2 assists in 24 games. 21-year-old was drafted in the second round in 2021. 17 goals last year, but this season, not much has gone right. It's not been good. Some believe he should never have been put in the American Hockey League after he was drafted. This kid should have gotten junior. Next year is going to be his fourth year in Abbotsford with no NHL call-ups. He can't get into the lineup these days. He's a healthy scratch, and yet some games the team goes with 11 forwards, and he's still sitting in the press box. I don't think Dan Milstein's doing cartwheels right now about his season and the way it's gone. This kid came out of the draft with a ton of promise, good size, skill. Now you can't get in the lineup. In the last 4 years in the draft, the Canucks only drafted wingers in the first three rounds, Lekera, Mackey, and Klimovic. It's not an area of strength for the team when it comes to prospects. Time will tell what happens here, but getting Klimovic back on the right track should be very important. It is very important. This is not an organization flush with winger prospects. It has not been a good year for his development, to say the least.
What was the reason that he went to the AHL?
It was the previous regime. It was the previous regime. And he was a big kid. He was a thick kid. He was, I think, 6'2", either at 200 pounds or close to 200 pounds. To put him in the American League, look, and there are people today who think that was a mistake, but that was a call made by the previous regime. And so now you're going to tell this kid to go back to Abbotsford next year for the fourth straight year. He's had no NHL call-ups. That kid should have played junior. That kid, he should have gone to junior, lit it up, scored 50 goals. I think he was, there was a team in the Quebec League that had his rights. I'm pretty sure about that. But that this is now, you know, he can't get in the lineup. He's a healthy scratch, you know, and this is, and, you know, everyone's going to bring up Logan Stankovic, who, you know, was taken six or seven picks after Klimovic, and he's in the Dallas Stars lineup. So now you're going to start seeing a lot of that stuff as well. It just, he's gone backwards this year, and I think that it's not good.
Yeah, because I remember when Klimovic was drafted, Benning actually said he'll probably go to the Q, and then for whatever reason, they changed their mind. Anyway, not front burner issue, but...
No, it's something to keep an eye on, and when you look, it is kind of too... Jason, because the Canucks have nine UFAs and they're not going
to... No, that's true. They need to develop some young kids down there.
They need to develop kids that are going to be knocking on the door. And they need guys knocking on the door every year. And they need guys going to training camp and pushing roster spots. And they need guys like... But this is a second-round pick, too, Jason. It's not a fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh-round pick. And if you look at the Klimovic draft... you know, there wasn't, it was him in the second, and I think they didn't get another pick till fifth or something like that. He's their only hope in that draft to play in the NHL someday. So it hasn't been good.
Rick, this was great, man. Thanks for doing it. Enjoy the game on Sunday. Should be a good one. We'll be doing this again next Friday.
You got it.
That was the
same. Nobody pumps Pettersson more than Taylor in the market.
Yeah, that was like one of six innuendos.
Yeah,
that's
going in the bank.
The best is that all of them are so unintentional. So unintentional.
Sorry, one more time.
It doesn't mean a single thing that he says.
Nobody pumps Pettersson more than Taylor in the market.
There's not even a better way to say that. That's Rick. Okay.
The number one Pettersson pumper.
Yeah.
Quite the title.
As you can see by my shirt, number one Pettersson pumper. I am indeed.
As a t-shirt. They make t-shirts.
I think my number one Pettersson pumper t-shirt will answer all further questions about my Pettersson pumping.
He's trying to interview Petey in a scrum. He's wearing the t-shirt.
Okay. What we learned.
Oh, you're the guy.
I'm going to clean this up a little bit here in a literal sense. We got a few things that we need to mention in terms of what we learned from the National Hockey League. The awards, three trophies solidified last night. Nikita Kucherov wins the Art Ross. That is because Nathan MacKinnon did not get 6 points last
night. He got two.
Yeah, he was close, but not that close. So congrats to Nikita Kucherov. Austin Matthews, as many know, won the Rocket Richard Trophy with 69 goals.
Nice. Connor, I don't really want to give him the nice, though. Connor, he's on the Leafs.
Yeah, that's fair. Hellebuck won the Jennings, which has changed... I keep forgetting it. Used to be the best goalie tandem, but now it's the minimum 25 games played with the fewest goals.
That's the way it's been for a while, the 25 game.
Yeah, but I liked it back in the day.
If you remember, the Canucks actually put Schneider into a game for 30 seconds at the end of it just so he could reach the threshold. The Jets didn't do that. Brossoit finished two games short.
And joke. Most notably, Quinn Hughes finished as your top defenseman scorer. First time Canuck has ever done that with 92 points. Also, on the news of the NHL.
Who won the plus-minus award?
I don't know, actually.
Not Bedard.
Someone look that up. One of you two. Dogs, look up plus-minus winner this year. I want to read the Bud Light plus-minus award. Jeff Schultz won it 1 year for the Washington Capitals.
Oh, congratulations to...
Yeah?
Gustav Forsling.
Nice!
Former Canucks draft pick.
It all comes full circle
here. +56 with the Florida Panthers. Quinn Hughes was in the race.
Yeah.
He won the Canucks award.
Forsling cleared it by 10 pluses, though.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the green jacket William Eklund of the San Jose Sharks, who really took advantage of the par fives and finished 45 under.
Hey, Bedard was -44 in only 68 games.
Yeah, imagine.
So he was one off the lead. Mm. I'd give it to Bedard.
-45 is pretty cool.
He was -3 last night.
That's pretty good. I mean, it's horrible for your career.
A lot of Sharks and Blackhawks in there.
Yeah, that's fair.
Philip Kurashev got it to 44 under, but couldn't quite finish the job.
He took that stupid penalty last night.
Yeah, they should give him a bonus minus for that.
Okay, so that's the awards part of things. We have not mentioned that yesterday, the not so insignificant news that the NHL officially confirmed the move to Utah. So since we're up against it for time, I'll just kind of go bullet points on this one. The Coyotes do officially become inactive. It's like if they want to start things back up, they got to push the activate button, and then boom, they get a franchise again. So you were right.
So did the guy that texted me in and said, you know, no, all the franchise history will go to Salt Lake. No, they're like, we don't want it. Yeah, we're not going to buy it. We'll buy the players, and I don't know if we've got some equipment, we'll probably buy that too. But this is it's weird because it's not an expansion. And they're not really called, I guess it's a relocation.
It's going to be a very interesting chapter it's for the NHL statisticians.
It's not an expansion team, but it's a new team, which is weird.
But it's not.
But there's a relocation fee.
But it's not.
Yeah.
But it is.
This is a uniquely brokered deal.
This is a classic NHL deal.
People have been comparing it to the Browns move.
Sure.
Right, in the NFL.
It's not that far.
You knew they were
getting
a team back at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of throws the whole history thing
but
into the arena.
Now it's like the original Winnipeg Jets era, which belongs to the Arizona Coyotes, will have no affiliation with the Utah organization, even though Utah is inheriting all of the team players and intellectual property from the previous.
But they're not taking the intellectual property
because the logos and the brands are still
remaining with Morello in like a safe in Arizona or something.
I misspoke. The actual phrase is hockey operations assets. Mm-hmm. That's what they're selling. Now, interestingly enough, it sounds like the Utah hockey team will be called the Utah hockey team, at least for year one. They're just going to have Utah across the front of the jerseys.
So they're not going to actually go with a name?
Not year. What are you?
They're doing a Washington football club.
Every day is what we learn.
That's right.
That's so ridiculous.
They're just going to be Utah next year.
Well, they got to brand the whole thing, right? Like, they don't want to rush
the branding.
Throw on some MS Paint. It'll be fine.
That's exactly what they don't want to do.
Hell, I'll brand it for you.
What you just.
Give me $5. Just AI generate something. Come on,
Andy, the scenario you just laid out is exactly what the team is trying to avoid. So they have applied.
Well, I mean, the Washington Commanders did this for a while, right? They were the Washington football
team. How were jersey sales during that time period?
Terrific. Terrific. They were I don't know.
I got a buddy.
Probably not very good.
I got a buddy. Shout out Adam. I think he listens quite frequently. He's a huge Washington fan. And he went out and accumulated some Washington football team gear during that brief tenure where they weren't the Redskins and they weren't the Commanders. And now it's like collector's item stuff. WFT on a shirt in Burgundy. Yeah.
So next year's Utah jersey that just says Utah will be a collector's item someday.
Yeah, exactly. So, by the way,
well, it's like the PWHL, right? They kind of scrapped their names and
they didn't want to rush it.
Just went with the cities.
Wyshynski did throw out there that courtesy the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the following names have been applied for: Utah Blizzard, Utah Venom, Utah Fury, which I don't hate.
That's not awful. Still
Utah HC.
That's Hockey Club.
And then Utah Hockey Club.
But they missed out Utah Yeti, which is the best one.
I think that there might be a trademarking issue there.
Maybe. Vladdy said Utah Saints, which I don't mind. One listener suggested Utah Storm and Mormons, which really rolls off the tongue.
I think they want to try and remove the religious overtones.
Well, Saints
but
isn't going to help that. Utah, I really do like Utah Yeti, but yeah, you're right. Maybe there's a...
Isn't Yetis thing. Plural, though? Like,
well, who cares?
No, yeah, I think Yeti... You have to go Yeti singular.
It's not like Kraken.
Yeti?
Yeti?
Utah Yeti?
I believe it's Yeti. Okay, you bring up a good point with the religious overtones of Saints, obviously. Mm-hmm. Are Saints less... I guess they're not less like singularly focused. What's the word I'm looking for? Denominational, right?
Could be any.
But Saints are largely like Catholic.
I just think of the Spruce Grove Saints. They've got a pretty sweet logo, and
I don't know.
Weren't the Utah Saints like a music band, like an electronic music band?
I've never heard of the Utah Saints. Before.
Utah Saints. You ever hear that part of a song? No. Come on.
Oh,
someone knows. You're right. Yeah, the Utah Saints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're an English electronic music duo.
Mm-hmm. What was the song they had?
I don't know.
There was one I want to say it was something in the 90s.
Whatever the case, we can't play it.
Oh, I want to be in that rumba. And a Saint go over there. Oh, over
perfect
there.
Goal song right there.
Oh, over there.
All right, give us a moo cow on that.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.